You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is our review of Split.
Hey, pardon me, sir. I think you have the wrong car.
What are we doing here?
I was sent to get you for a reason.
Open the door! No!
There's a flower on the pillows, a flower in the bathroom, like we're important.
The only chance we have is if all three of us go crazy on this guy.
Who is that? Maybe she can help us.
We're here! Help us!
We're in here!
Don't worry. He's not allowed to touch you. He knows what you're here for. Listens to me.
All right, everybody, you were just listening to the trailer for Split, and the story of this movie is, even though Kevin has evidenced 23 personalities to his trusted psychiatrist, Dr. Fletcher, there remains one still submerged who is set to materialize and dominate all of the others. Compelled to abduct the three teenage girls led by the willful, observant Casey, Kevin reaches a war for survival among all of those contained within him, as well as everyone around him, as the walls between his compartments start to shatter. The film is starring James McAvoy, Anya Taylor-Joy, and Betty Buckley. It is written and directed by M. Night Shyamalan, or as Quentin Tarantino likes to say, M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong. And joining me for this review, I've got Kristen Lopez.
Hello, everybody.
So, Kristen, the question I want to just first ask you is this. Heading into this movie, were you excited to see an M. Night Shyamalan film to begin with? Or do you think that he should always be referred to as M. Night Shyamalan Ding Dong? This has been. Who the hell is this guy? Like, he was a fluke, essentially, with The Sixth Sense. So where do you fall with his work, basically?
I don't consider him the one-trick pony most people would. I love The Sixth Sense, but I also really enjoy Signs. I love up until about The Village. I can usually make arguments that I like those. Those are the three that I go to. After that, I think they're all, like, hot garbage. I know he didn't direct Devil, but I think that is probably, you know, I give that some props, mostly because his input in that was limited. But other than that, yeah, I kind of feel like he hasn't had a good movie in over 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
To me, at least. I know a lot of people loved The Visit. I found that movie to be insufferably stupid. So for me, this was kind of like, oh, he's still got something there. Finally, we're seeing it. Because, yeah, I did not think The Visit was any good at all.
Ooh, harsh criticism there, because I thought The Visit was middle of the road. Like, and you know what? His career had fallen so far down that the only place really to go was up at this point. So even while I will maintain The Visit isn't necessarily good, it was still better than the constant stream of shit that we've been getting from him over the last decade or so.
It was the diaper of shit to the face. That was, yeah.
Oh. Fine. Well, what do you think of his newest effort, though, in Split?
I was really surprised because I was really enjoying what I kind of thought was his attempt to make kind of a 1980s genre picture. Because you have this very high concept premise, guy kidnaps three girls. Is it some sort of Satanist cult thing? Because he keeps saying that they're sacred. He's got multiple personalities. So you're getting a little of Psycho. You're getting a little of, you know, those 80s slasher movies, kind of like that B-grade stuff that, you know, usually I always think of, like, when I try to explain 80s genre pictures, I always think of House on Sorority Row, where they're in the third act, you find out that there's a disabled, you know, grown man child living in the attic. Stuff like that. That's kind of what I was thinking of. I thought that McAvoy was great, but for me, I wish they were advertising how fucking amazing Anya Taylor-Joy is in this movie. and yeah. Haley Lou Richardson from Edge of 17, who I always kind of root for. I thought they were all really good. I was very happy that he didn't go down Rape Road, which I was thinking was going to happen.
They kind of hint at it at first,
they hint at it a little bit, yeah. So I was really going along with this. I was not thinking about twists up until maybe about the like hour 45 mark. I started to think, okay, well, is this going to happen? Is this going to happen? Maybe. I almost thought for a long time, because it's played so straight, that the twist was that there's no twist. And it's just as it is. We'll get into spoilers in a second, but for me, the twist really pissed me off. Mostly not out of the fact that it is a totally hubristic, audacious thing that I thought made M. Night Shyamalan seem like the cockiest director in the world, but because of the things he's referencing. I have a very personal antipathy towards the end of this movie that we'll talk about, but for I said it was 98% of a great, great movie. 2% of what just irritated the living shit out of me.
Now, would it surprise you if I told you that I was literally the exact opposite?
Oh, interesting.
So you made a lot of comparisons to a lot of films. And I think that what Shyamalan does with this movie is very reminiscent of what I got last year in 10 Cloverfield Lane.
That's exactly what I saw. I saw a lot of 10 Cloverfield Lane in this.
Right. So because of that, I was kind of left a little bored, a little uninspired outside of Anya Taylor-Joy, who, as you mentioned, is fantastic in this. I did think Haley Lou Richardson and the other girl in this movie, whose name is escaping me right now, I didn't feel like they had as many opportunities as Anya Taylor-Joy did to kind of, I guess, you know, grab my attention.
There's a lot of red herrings thrown in with their characters that we can touch on when we get to spoilers, but I thought that they were really there to act as red herrings.
Sure, sure. I kind of got that vibe a little bit.
But I will say that for me, because I love 10 Cloverfield Lane, it made me like this more. So I'm the exact opposite.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm watching this, and really what's holding this movie together for me is James McAvoy and Anya Taylor-Joy. I mean, we got to talk about McAvoy. He, in my opinion, is the reason to see this movie. Whether you understand the twist at the end of the movie or you don't, I think that what McAvoy is doing in this film is pretty remarkable, because each personality that he portrays has very distinct qualities about them. It never really seems to teeter into full-blown camp, although it does definitely walk a fine line there, where there were times where, you know, it's just you get that unintentional laughter from the audience, and then you get those moments where maybe the laughter is intentional. For example, when he plays the 9-year-old known as Hedwig, he has a line that he says a lot throughout the movie, and it's the line, et cetera. And that always seemed to get a laugh from my audience, at least.
I think that the scene where I was really waiting for it to veer into just over the top was the dance sequence.
Yeah.
I was like, Ex Machina. Ex Machina did the high concept dance sequence out of nowhere, and it worked. This works, I think, marginally, only because you're not sure whether to be uncomfortably frightened or uncomfortably like finding it humorous. So I was kind of laughing, but at the same time thinking, this is so goddamn weird.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned being uncomfortable, and that was the feeling that this movie gave me. I kind of went into this thinking this was going to be like a jump scare horror film, and I almost had forgotten that M. Night Shyamalan is not that kind of a director. He is more of a suspense director that wants to unnerve you and make you feel uncomfortable.
He very much adheres to the Hitchcock school, or the right. Twilight Zone, that serial element of building suspense in a very with a very high concept premise and then unpacking from there.
Yeah, and I had almost like forgotten that this aspect of him existed. You know, we've gotten Last Airbender, we've gotten After Earth, and oh god, I'm like shivering right now just like thinking about him.
I have to throw out, and I know somebody's going to say, "Can't we?" And I don't want to discount the fact that he's a person of color who is continually given the opportunity to make big budget movies and films of substance. But I just kept thinking, you read all those bombs, big bombs. If that had been a woman, let alone a woman of color, just a woman in general, that bitch would not have a career at this point.
I mean, the fact that he even is a person of color.
Yeah.
And that hasn't, you know, I mean, to a certain degree, you can also argue that he has had his time in the doghouse. So
it's a double-edged sword. I find it interesting that there's two camps, I think, with him that, you know, people say it's great. He's a person of color. He's championing, you know, getting constant second chances. And then there are people that say he's the Ryan Reynolds of directing. You know, they just keep throwing stuff at him until they find the right thing that works. And then we'll always just ignore the crap.
Well, it's clear that what works is when he does suspense.
Yeah.
The big budget stuff is not his thing.
Yeah. When I was writing my review of this, I said he works best when it's an isolation. A specific location in Pennsylvania, usually. A very small, contained cast, usually confined to one location. That's what works for him. When you start putting in different setups and more than like four or five actors, you have a problem. I think to that effect, it works even better here, because as the movie progresses, you have three girls in a room, and as the movie goes on, that dwindles down to two girls in one room and one in another, or two, you know, he keeps breaking down the box smaller and smaller and smaller until it just becomes claustrophobic.
Yeah, eventually we get down to one girl, and it does become almost like primal horror survival in the third act of this movie, which I always respond to on an emotional level all the time when I watch like stuff like Green Room or just something that just feels very what's the word I'm looking for here? Because I keep wanting to say man versus man, but this is a woman. So human versus human, I'll say. And that idea of you have to rely on your wits and everything else to get yourself out of a certain situation.
It's a very 80s plot line. You know, Anya Taylor-Joy is the final girl, quote unquote. And,
right.
You know, it's very hearkening back to stuff like, and I know people are going to say, how dare you bring up comparisons, like Halloween. You know, at the end of the day, that movie is woman against monster. You know, going back to even, you know, Frankenstein or, you know, the old 30s. And that's really what it becomes, aside from the twist, which is where I think it's very firmly in the 80s, because things get very outlandish.
Sure. Going back to some things that I don't like about this film, I think that while M. Night Shyamalan makes a lot of great effort in terms of his directing, like I said, in terms of the suspense aspect, I think his writing still leaves a lot to be desired. I do not like the way that this film portrays mental illness. In fact, I think it takes a very serious subject and kind of presents it in a very childish manner. And I also really, really hate his self-serving cameos that he always does in his movies. And he has another one here that just made me absolutely
cringe. I was happy it was not Lady in the Water, where he's like a character in the whole movie, where he's just like acting. Although I did just watch Deepwater Horizon, and that has a Peter Berg cameo, and I just kind of rolled my eyes. I'm really not a fan. You know, Hitchcock did it. You guys aren't Hitchcock. Stop cameoing in your films. But you bring up a good point about the mental illness thing, which the disabled community has really come out against this movie for the depiction of the multiple personality or dissociative identity disorder, which many doctors say does not exist. There are many people who say it does. And that's been Hollywood fodder since Joanne Woodward got nominated for an Oscar for The Three Faces of Eve in the 50s, and I think it was 58. So Hollywood loves the multiple personality because it allows for an actor to really just be very showy and to go through a litany of impressions. And I think that the movie has these really hard, difficult themes, and M. Night just kind of read a book about one of them or Googled it and then just assumed. I did not have quite the issue with the multiple personalities because, again, I've seen stuff like Three Faces of Eve, so I know that Hollywood loves that. I had an issue with Casey's subplot, which I don't know if we want to... Is that
not
a spoiler?
Not here. No, we'll save that for spoilers.
It's a very, again, much like something like Elle, it's a very real thing for women, and the way he utilizes it just comes off like shock value, and I did not appreciate it. If he wanted to, again, use it as a red herring and really, or even implement it into the ending in some way, I would have not seen it as a gimmick, which I think is kind of what it is. Like, we have to break her utterly. Utter fucking Lee. I mean, you know, I did not care for that. That rubbed me the wrong way more than anything.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It all adds up to a message, which I think is kind of bland and boring, which is essentially past trauma can make a person stronger. I just found that to be kind of unoriginal, essentially.
Well, and from starting with that being A, and that last 2 seconds being B, those two plot lines and those two themes have nothing whatsoever to do with each other.
Right, right. Going back to some comments you were making earlier about mental illness and how it gives actors kind of an opportunity to do these impressions, so to speak, what's your take on James McAvoy and the work he's doing in this film? Are you a fan of it? Do you think it's good?
The last James McAvoy movie I saw was X-Men Apocalypse, and I hated it. Every second of it, I thought it was horrible. And keep in mind, I am a disabled person. James McAvoy, much like Patrick Stewart, plays the king of comic book cripples, which I already like, whatever. But here, I mean, he's going balls out for, you know, whatever it's worth. I thought that the way he modulates his voice more than anything, you know, the facial contorting and the disguise, you know, the glasses versus the beanie that he wears. I didn't really feel that was particularly impressive. For me, it was the fact that he could drop his voice 2 or 3 octaves and be one person, or raise it and be another person, and his personality and bearing just totally changes. You know, I think the Hedwig character is, it's funny. It's a bit pointless in the grand scheme of things. Really, it's him playing 2 characters more than anything else, at 3 if you count the ending. But I did like, there's a moment where he's talking to Betty Buckley's character, who is also fantastic. The women in this movie do a phenomenal job. But she thinks that she is talking to one alter, quote unquote, instead of the person that he's presenting himself as.
I like that scene, yeah.
And I really thought that was, more than anything, impressive acting on his part, because he's not only imitating a alter of a person already, but he's that alter altering his personality to imitate some other facet of his person. I mean, that is like Inception shit right there. I thought that was more impressive than anything else, because the audience, once we know kind of the defining characteristics, we really do notice that he's putting on a performance about putting on a performance.
Right, right. And as a result of that, I think that personally, I wouldn't be surprised if he pops up. And I know we're talking like, you know, a long ways away from now, but I would not be surprised if he popped up on some critics' end of year best actor lists.
Yeah, it's very, again, I think it's why a lot of people liked Joanne Woodward in Three Faces of Eve. It's why a lot of people loved Toni Collette in The United States of Tara. You know, they love the fact that you have an actor playing different facets of a personality, some completely different genders or something like that. It's kind of a one-man show ability for an actor to do. So I think it's very easy to see why critics and audiences respond to it, because it allows an actor to essentially go nuts.
Yep. Yep, definitely does. That talk about critics' awards wins is a good segue to lead into final thoughts, grade out of 10, and any Oscar potential for next year that you sense for this movie. And then we'll head into spoilers, Kristen, so take it away.
I'm going to say Oscar potential. You know, usually I would say they're not going to remember a movie in January, come November, December. But we've been proven wrong lately. But I still don't think this is going to get... It's not... I rewatched The Sixth Sense after I saw this, and the reason I think that did so well come awards time was that it's a very tender-hearted story. The script is very tightly written. It's very hard for audiences, and I'm sure there are people that hate The Sixth Sense. It's very hard to not say that that script has some beautiful prose, or that Bruce Willis has some fantastic acting. This, you can really kind of pull apart a lot of things. You know, the script isn't that great. James McAvoy's performance has been done by other actors before. It's just not done by him. So I'm going to say I don't see this getting any awards potential come next year. I did really enjoy it. I think that watching this was like watching Savages, if anybody's seen that with Blake Lively, where they change the ending and literally the movie cuts to black and then it has an extra scene. And I was like, wait, if they removed that scene entirely, the movie would have lost nothing and it would have been better for it. I was really on board with Split until the last 30 seconds. I think that last 30 seconds is just M. Night Shyamalan being like, I'm so goddamn awesome. And part of it is personal bias. I do not like the reference, but that's me. So it really did dampen things for me specifically. But overall, I really enjoyed this. I'm going to give this a 7 out of 10.
It's so funny because the twist for you hurt the movie, where for me, I felt like it enhanced it, actually.
Yeah, people fall into two clearly divided camps with this movie, and that's one of them.
Yeah, it's very, very amazing because my overall grade is actually lower. I'm a 6 out of 10 because I think while it is solidly well-crafted and well-directed, I think that as a writer, he still struggles a bit. And I also think that there's a couple of other nitpicky things here and there that I particularly did not like. I mean, I've already mentioned the campiness of it, the overall like tone of the film. One thing I do want to call attention to that I did like were I really liked the opening titles, actually, because I really liked that they had multiple tiles of the same font like going across the screen. And I thought that was pretty cool to play into like the Split personality sort of thing. James McAvoy, worth the price of admission, in my opinion. Anya Taylor-Joy, she is so incredibly strong. If she just did horror, thriller, suspense movies for the rest of her career, I'm totally down with it. Like, with this, Morgan and the Witch, she's kind of, like, proven that she's, like, the scream queen, so to speak, I guess you could say. So, as long as she continues to keep working with very interesting directors and some interesting projects, I am fully on board with her as an actress. I do think that a lot of other people in this movie kind of get short-shrifted a little bit, even Betty Buckley. I think that while her scenes with James McAvoy are good, there is something missing that's making it truly great for me. I'm not exactly sure what that is, but just an extra added component to them. And with that said, Oscar potential is a no. And like I said, maybe James McAvoy might pop up for some critics' awards here and there, but this is not an Oscar movie by any means. So a 6 out of 10 from me. And let's head over into spoilers so we can talk about those final 30 seconds.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
All right, Kristen, let it out. What's your deal with this ending here? Because I'll tell you...
Did we want to talk about the ending first, or what I felt M. Night Shyamalan did regarding Anya Taylor-Joy's character that happens before that that didn't really work with me?
Talk about whatever you want.
Okay, well, Anya Taylor-Joy's character, Casey, you find out that she is a loner who intentionally gets sent to detention so that she doesn't have to go home. Because her father died as a small child, when she was a small child, and she is being molested by an uncle. And she's essentially the Jenny of this film. And I didn't really feel that benefited anything. Yes, it benefits in the end when McAvoy spares her life because she is quote-unquote broken, and even though the movie's trying to say he thinks she's broken but she's really not, I still felt that the way the movie plays out, it doesn't go anywhere other than she gets to live because of that, and because now she has the strength and the inner fortitude to tell somebody about what's been going on. I thought that was a really just kind of reductive bow on the end of it. I kept thinking what would have really worked for me is if they said your guardians come get you, and it was fucking James McAvoy, and like she just this is just something he did. He brought girls home, and you know, it was really fucked up. I would have really appreciated that, because, or the fact that, you know, throughout the entire movie you're waiting to figure out if McAvoy and her are the same person in some way. you know, and this is all just a figment of her imagination. I thought that mainly because the other two girls that she's with are not friends of hers, and one of them is named Marcia, which I was like, this is 2016, 2017. Who names their 16-year-old daughter Marcia in 2016? I thought that was kind of...
Shyamalan.
Yeah, I figured he was using it as a red herring. Although The Longest Ride did that too, so maybe it's just... Maybe Marcia's making a comeback. I don't know. But I really didn't feel like he needed molesty uncle. I know that he tried to make it like both her and Kevin were molested by parents or guardians, but it really just didn't work for me. I don't know if that worked for you.
It didn't. I was not on board with that form of storytelling. I thought that what it amounted to in the end, with the reveal that he kind of does spare her and that this past trauma can give you great strength, as it does for McAvoy and as it does for her in defeating him in the end and surviving. I didn't agree with the message. I also just... It just rubbed me the wrong way. And so as a result, I was like left with just such a sour taste in my mouth. And then when the ending does come and, you know, there's like the scene where she's waiting to be picked up and everything, I was waiting because I knew there was a twist. I went in knowing, you know, that there was something about this movie, and I was waiting for the big reveal because heading into this movie, my initial idea of what the twist was that it was going to be that when McAvoy does transform into the Beast, he actually does grow like fangs and like morphs his body into like a computer generated imagery of an actual beast like monster.
See, my thing was that this was going to turn into Identity, if anybody remembers that movie, and that they were all just going to be either all of everybody, the entire plot we were seeing was McAvoy's head, or that everything we were seeing was in Anya Taylor-Joy's head. When they bring her up from the zoo and it looks like white walls, I was like, is she in a mental institution? Like, is this Shutter Island? Like, I had other things where I was constantly looking to think maybe this was going on. But honestly, by the end, because it lasts so long, I thought there was no twist and that this was completely straight, which is why when he starts turning into the Beast, quote unquote, I was like, oh, what if the twist is that this is just the movie? And that would be really cool. And then the last 30 seconds happened. So we find out, I'm just going to throw it out there. I don't know if Matt, you have a nice florid way of describing it. You find out essentially McAvoy has not been caught. He has become this new super villain called the Horde. And as soon as I heard the term super villain, I said, no, we're not going to do this. And you pan down to the end of this diner and we see Bruce Willis. And that's when I started screaming, no, why do we see this? And somebody says, oh, he's like that guy from a couple years ago, Mr. Glass. And the movie ends. This is tied into Unbreakable. A, let's get the non-personal elements out of the way. You got some balls, M. Night, to think that you have enough, like, movies for a shared universe, let alone this kind of connected storytelling. I know that a lot of people have always said his films are interconnected, but he's really owning that shit now. I mean, that's some audacity. Like, he thinks he's really cool that he can do all that. That's neither here nor... Well, oh, go on.
I think you've got the wrong idea.
Go for it. You can tell me.
Because the way I see it is this. Typically, when you have a villain versus a good guy in a movie, you're forced to tell the origin story of that villain, or the villain just is and he exists within the world and we don't really get an origin story and the two clash. And what he did, I thought, was something that was very unique, where he spent an entire movie dedicated solely to explaining who the villain is. And so as a result, when these two ultimately do come together, I think we're going to get a lot more of an enrichment of character development and, you know, be able to just share in the riches of that because we've had two films worth of buildup. And it was something that no one expected. So as a result, we don't have expectations that can or cannot be met. We're just simply along for the ride and are enjoying it.
Okay, so then by that second token, connecting it to Unbreakable is what pissed me off more than anything.
How?
Okay, let's get personal here. I have only ever seen part of Unbreakable. I refuse to watch it. Why do I refuse to watch it? Because the summer that came out, I'm assuming it came out during the summer, I just remember that for the last, it's been out for the last 17 years of my life, I have been told that I have the quote-unquote unbreakable disease. Yes, because much like Samuel L. Jackson's character in that movie, I have osteogenesis imperfecta, which M. Night Shyamalan decides to use for supervillain effect. So the last 17 years, anytime I have said, you know, I have this disability, people will say, and I was like, this movie I didn't even think did a lot of business when it came out. Apparently everybody and their sister has seen this film, because I get asked all the time, oh, like the guy in Unbreakable, right? Have you seen Unbreakable? Do you like Unbreakable? It's a great movie, isn't it? I mean, it's telling your, you know, it's about your disability. You know, it totally latches onto it, doesn't it? Doesn't it just explain you? And I have to sit there and shake my head and say, no, I've never seen it. I know enough about it that I feel like I don't need to, because I've been told it's a very reductive look at, you know, the disability. Like, you know, he sneezes and like, oh, I broke my leg.
But you know what it is, though, Kristen? It's a very, very, very different take on the superhero genre that is refreshing. And it's not something that you, especially compared to nowadays, because superhero films are just all the rage now. But you also have to remember that when this came out, I believe it was 2002.
I thought it was 2000. That's why I said 17. I could be wrong.
Oh, no, because it wouldn't be 1 year after Sixth Sense, in my opinion.
Okay. I could be wrong.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, because they even say in the movie 15 years prior.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so anyways, it doesn't matter. Bottom line is that back in 2002, when this movie came out, there weren't that many superhero films like on the scale of a Marvel or the DC brand that we have today. So what Unbreakable really did in addressing certain tropes of the genre were, for their time, considered unique. And I think that that's why that movie got a lot of fans. It also became known as the only other M. Night Shyamalan film that was actually considered good, along with The Sixth Sense. So most people that are fans of his work have really seen those two and maybe some of the others here and there. You know what I mean? So I think that's why this film, although the fan base for it is very, very small in my opinion, they're a very, very devoted bunch of people. And that's why you got the ecstatic response from so many people, but also because, too, nobody expected this. This film has not been marketed as such. It's not been talked about as such. This film was screened months ago, and people managed to keep the twist under wraps. I don't even know how the hell that was even possible, but I was very, very impressed that I got a supervillain origin story when I thought I was getting a B-movie thriller. And that, I thought, was really, really neat.
I'm anticipating more people saying that I have the Unbreakable disease. So I'm not looking forward to hearing that again. But yeah, I mean, I maintain my issues with the ending are my own. You know, I know 98% of the U.S. or the world probably won't have the same antipathy that I do, because they're able-bodied people. But yeah, for me, that was kind of where I was just like, God fucking damn it, that movie rears its ugly head again. I was just taken back to the summer of 2002 or whenever that happened, when, yeah, everybody had to ask me that question. I kind of just felt like I needed to have a sign on my back that says, no, it's not like Unbreakable, please move on.
Well, here's the opportunity now for you to see the movie, Kristen.
I don't want to.
We're going to get, but also think about the prospects of this. We're going to get a movie with Bruce Willis and James McAvoy that hopefully isn't a big special effects, high-budgeted film directed by M. Night Shyamalan, but is more of a hopefully gritty action film directed by M. Night Shyamalan. Because, as we said before, his big-budget works are not really his strong suit.
You know, M. Night Shyamalan wants to make me happy. Get a person with OI to play the hero and, like, kick some ass and not be reductive, and maybe I'd be happy. I don't know. I don't know what would make me happy, but I just know that I would probably, if y'all want me to watch it, I'll watch it, but you're going to have to get, like, you're going to get a shit ton of nitpicks. Like, a shit ton. It's going to be 90% nitpick.
Well, you got to remember, everybody always brings their own personal experiences to a film that they watch and form their own opinion based upon that. So, I mean, what you take into the film is what you take out.
Fucking unbreakable.
It's true. In any event, though, I mean, listen, I you mentioned 98% of the world's population and, you know, reacting to this movie. I also, I know that there were a ton of people when I left the theater that were like, I don't understand. Why is everyone high-fiving? What's happening? Like, people were very, very confused. And there were a lot of us that were going up to, like, random strangers. Like, I even talked to people who I'd never spoken to before, and I was like, oh man, I'm like, basically it's a we just saw I don't even know, oh my gosh, Unbreakable, and I'm like freaking out because I was just on such a high, because it just totally just took me by surprise. And people were like, what movie is that? And I'm like, it's the one that they made fun of in Not Another Teen Movie with Mr. T. Like, I was like, I was trying so hard to explain to like one guy like what this movie was, and he was just completely oblivious. And I think that a lot of people are going to feel that way. I've even said to people, the best way I can explain to anyone that has seen this movie and they're very excited about the ending, they want to like tell people to see it, say the following. Go into this movie if you are a fan of M. Night Shyamalan's previous work. If you and you know what, if the person is not a fan of their work and AKA has not seen Unbreakable, they'll probably watch this and say this movie is decent. But once again, when that ending comes, unless if they're in a very, very tightly tiny small theater with not a lot of people, then they're going to just, you know, be like, what's going on here? I don't get it. So I'll tell you this, though. DVD and Blu-ray sales for Unbreakable are going to go up right now. That's for sure. You may not be happy about it, but damn, I'm happy to see that this film has a second life. Not to mention, too, Bruce Willis, God bless the man. Isn't he, like, in his 60s and he's still giving us action films? Like, that's just insane.
I kind of want to know how much he got paid for, like, 10 seconds of work.
I don't know.
Probably a ridiculous amount.
He's probably going to sabotage the whole project and, you know, just have a very miserable, like, experience on set, much in the way he did with, like, Kevin Smith and Cop Out or something, I'm sure. I mean, Bruce Willis is such a question mark for me nowadays that, like, I think the last good thing I saw him in was Looper. So, take that for what you will. Anyways, Kristen, where can I find you on the internet?
I am at Journeys_film on Twitter.
And you can find me at Next Best Picture. Everyone, thank you so much for listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, where you can subscribe to us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and Player FM. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will see you all next time.